Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that song can only mean one thing. That new song can only mean one thing, and that is you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. This is Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berger. How you doing, man?
Good to be here, dude. Always. Jersey Wrecking Crew, open up the High Spot Podcast. And again, you'll also listen to us on Brains 2 Radio Network, on Twitter at Brains 2 Radio. Shout out Chris Hamill. And shout out to Jimmy the Greek for producing that lovely intro, which we'll be using now regularly on the show. Yeah, thanks so much.
Mad props to Jimmy the Greek. You follow him also on Twitter at The Bullpen with DA. Has his own baseball talk show, and now they just talk about a lot of stuff too. But Brian, great show for you coming up. We've got Lee England Jr., and a lot of people are wondering, exactly why Lee England Jr.? Well, you know why? Because he touched us in Brooklyn. NXT Brooklyn Takeover. That's right. That violin, it still plays in my ear. So it's going to be great to talk to Lee England Jr. later on here on the High Spot Podcast.
An iconic man for an iconic show, the High Spot Podcast. But Jeff, like I said, we're going to have him on. It was great. Just rehashing a lot of memories from SummerSlam week we had. What a great time that was. Definitely had that WrestleMania feel to it. But right now, finally, for the first time I can say, as a wrestling fan, I really have nothing to complain about. Yeah, shows I can complain about, where the direction of certain superstars are going, storylines, management, creative, which you always complain about. But right now, Jeff, if you're a wrestling fan, we have Shinsuke Nakamura, who's, believe it or not, I have no idea how much longer he's going to be on NXT, because, what else does he have to accomplish? He's already won the title. He's only a few more months away, I think, from coming to the main roster, maybe a little bit longer than that. Kevin Owens, the Universal title, which kind of, softened the blow of Finn Balor being injured. Kevin Owens is the Universal champion. Still can't say that without a feeling of...
You deserve it, right?
Yeah, I'm chanting that, although Kevin Owens might tell me otherwise. We don't deserve to tell him or chant him that. And now AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, the face that runs the place, and now he's the champ that runs the camp, is the new WWE World Champion. Let's just say he's the WWE champion, which is more important to me. I don't care about the world or the universe. He's the WWE champion. Well deserved, but more importantly, not just because he deserves it, Jeff, because he earned it. And that's going to be a t-shirt, and they're going to steal it from me, and I know they're going to use that eventually in a t-shirt, and I'm going to be out of, money on that one.
Well, it was an impressive backlash, getting a lot of good reviews. You got AJ Styles, who, of course, became the champ that runs the camp, beating Dean Ambrose, and then also you got Becky Lynch becoming the first ever SmackDown Live champion, women's champion.
Oh, that lovely last kicker, yes.
And you've got Heath Slater and Rhino, who became the first ever SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions. So, what I got to take from it is a lot of the fans probably left to go home with a smile on their faces, because I think it was a very, very fan-friendly show.
I think if you and I break this down, which you could break it down match for match, but ultimately at the end, I think SmackDown Live's first ever individual pay-per-view since this draft has happened, you have to call it a success. You want to give it a grade, we can grade if we want to, but at the end of the day, it's a success, and it's hopefully going to lead into further pay-per-views, which I've told you time and time again, Jeff, the thing that SmackDown does differently than Raw is that I feel that SmackDown incorporates their storylines a lot more into this. We were very well aware of every single match on that card and the significance behind it, whatever they decided to give us in terms of storyline, and it made sense. And the endings were somewhat surprising, and towards the end, helps set up the next pay-per-view, which is what you want.
I know, and for them also to get six matches, not 8 or 11 matches, get six matches where they can have enough time to tell a story or have enough time to show their skills, I think is a great thing too. And I also think it's a positive for SmackDown. I think having a 2-hour show is also positive. You don't get that filler. You don't get that extra stuff that you really don't need, that Raw has to give you, because they're a 3-hour show and they're the flagship and they have to entertain you. They don't have to just give you wrestling. But I got to give SmackDown props. The last few weeks, with Talking Smack, with SmackDown, for a roster that's limited, for a roster that, is thin right now, for them to be able to put on a better product the last few weeks, maybe go into a whole month that's better than Raw, just says a lot of the direction SmackDown's going. And it also tells you, Brian, that let's just say that the formula is not that hard. The formula is you have a good story, you have good wrestling, you have a good end, and you know what? And that's all the fans want. And basically, I think right now SmackDown and NXT do a much better job than Raw is.
Well, if we're talking about formula, in my personal opinion, the formula has always been the same. It just depends on the execution of it. And if we're comparing it, as of right now, SmackDown is executing far more better than Raw. But, you know, continuing on with SmackDown now, we've been set of what's happened. AJ Styles is the champ. Becky Lynch is the women's champion. We have new tag team champions. And Heath Slater finally signing a contract being a part of the SmackDown roster. Maybe he did it. I don't know. I didn't see it. Jeff's telling me he did. So hoping that works. And what a great angle for there. And great that Heath Slater's gotten over the way he has. And much deserved to him and Rhino, who finally won a tag team championship anywhere in general. He's 1-1 here in the WWE.
And also AJ Styles becomes the first ever IWGP heavyweight champion and the first ever TNA champion and, of course, WWE champion. So the first person to win the trifecta in AJ Styles, which to me, honestly, right now, you say he's the face that runs the place. He's the champ that runs the camp, right? But to me, also the best wrestler in the world today.
Sounds familiar. I think I've heard that somewhere before, Jeff. But you talk about trifecta.
Best wrestler in the world today.
You know I love trifectas, Jeff. Or no, somebody else by the name of last name Brooks would say that as well. But you know, you talk about trifectas, and I love trifectas. You know, being three Pete's and being threes anywhere is a great number. But you know what? I'm kind of getting a little bit tired of three Pete's in terms of triple threat matches. I think it's being way overdone. And the reason why I'm saying that, guys, is because after SmackDown Live, we were informed that the following pay-per-view, which will happen, I think, about 4 weeks from now, for SmackDown will be No Mercy. And that will have the WWE World Championship on the line. And it won't be AJ Styles necessarily against Dean Ambrose in a instant rematch, because Dean Ambrose, you would think theoretically, in terms of storyline base,
the rematch.
Has a rematch clause. The champion who loses can get another rematch for it. Just fair, right? But now we have a wrinkle in that, where the return of the former face that ran the place, John Cena, came back and basically demanded that he wanted the WWE title in his possession so he could tie Ric Flair and become a 16-time world champion. So what does Shane McMahon do? He does what anybody would do, right? Hey, all three of you will be in the main event. To me, it just gets overdone. It loses its luster. I thought triple threat matches literally in the past were something special that you would see when you really wanted to make it more interesting and give it that feeling of unpredictability. Now it's just the norm. And I think it's so overdone that it lost its luster. And why can't they think of any other thing but triple threat matches nowadays?
Like you said, it loses its meaning. It's supposed to be something special. And just because John Cena, they don't have any feet to put him in, you got to have a triple threat match. And it makes the match more star power, but you'd like to have, you know, John Cena maybe try to work with someone else. And you have a guy in John Cena who lost at SummerSlam who's claiming that they want the title, which to me, in general, the champion or the former champion has every right to get his rematch clause, and it should be Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles one more time at No Mercy. But of course, we get John Cena, Dean Ambrose, and AJ Styles. And to me, wow, it's going to be tough for AJ Styles. You know, a lot of people are going to wonder, oh, is he just a transitional champion? Is John Cena going to win that 16th title, tie Ric Flair? You don't know. Is Dean Ambrose going to get another run with the title? You know, a lot of questions too, but I got to go with AJ Styles. I got to believe that they're going to build him up and he's going to be champion for a long time.
Yeah, and as soon as New Mercy approaches sooner, we'll start dissecting where we think they're going to go in terms of booking. So I think it's a little too early to talk about it now. Obviously, we both wish AJ Styles continues with that. But the thing that I'm liking more about this right now, if I have to look at it retrospectively, I have to look at it from the perspective of what they're trying to do here, is that SmackDown is doing a great job now of making things feel personal. And it really feels personal now between AJ and John Cena, and then you mix Dean Ambrose in there. You have them, it feels like they're throwing off the cuff. They're actually not necessarily going by what they're scripted, but they're kind of throwing their own version and spin on it. And there are times, especially with the altercation between John Cena and Dean Ambrose, it seems like a little surprise there. And that's what you need for a show, especially SmackDown, which, like you said, has a depleted roster. So I can't wait as the weeks go by how this goes, because each three of these competitors have the ability to increase this and make this bigger than what it should be. And what I hoped it was just going to be an individual match between Ambrose and Styles. But right now, these three personalities, money. That's all I got to say. It's money on that one.
Yeah, you got to, again, you got to love the interaction. You got to love Dean Ambrose hitting John Cena with that part-time wrestler. You know, it's got to sting John Cena because he's had an issue with part-time wrestlers coming in. And for him to be called that, it really got personal.
Huge offense to
him. I like
the
risk that they're taking, you know. I like that, you know, it didn't seem like it's scripted too. And they need to do more of that. So I really liked that hype up if that's how it's going to be. I wish AJ Styles would have, you know, maybe interjected a little bit more. But I see that they're building the Ambrose and John Cena, you know, rivalry too. So I totally understand. The whole podcast mention was pretty good too. So I like that dynamic. We also saw number one contender in Alexa Bliss be the new, you know, the new challenger to Becky Lynch too. So we're going to see that too at No Mercy. So a lot of good things happening on that show, SmackDown Live. Also to Heath Slater, like you said, going to buy that double wide for Beulah, signing the contract, and they defeat the Ascension and their first title defense. So a lot of good things going on.
Better be a super wide for her. Yep.
You know, and now we're going to go, you know, quickly shift it to Raw and talk about Raw. And now we know it's going to be Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins at Clash of Champions for the Universal Championship. Roman Reigns, of course, now has his eyes set on maybe getting revenge on Rusev. But we found out on Raw that we're going to get not a triple threat match, but a one-on-one between Owens and Rollins.
Oh, thank God. I thought it was actually a mistake. I thought it was supposed to be meant as a triple threat match. But really, looking at this, Jeff, this is the first time we'll ever be able to see Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens in the same ring. And it has interest for the fact that it feels like Seth Rollins is toting the line of being a babyface. We still don't know what's going to happen in terms of, we haven't seen Triple H since he pedigreed Seth Rollins and basically cost him the Universal Championship and gave it over to Kevin Owens. So it has that intrigue behind it. What's going on with Stephanie McFoley? And this is probably the biggest downfall of it all, that I'm actually having to include McFoley and Stephanie McMahon into this rivalry, which I think they really don't deserve to be in it, because the attention shouldn't be drawn on those two individuals. It should be drawn on the main attraction, the title, and the two competitors going after it. So, but also looking forward to it, because it's also going to be opening up Raw's first individual pay-per-view since the draft, Clash of Champions, where all the Raw titles will be on the line. Not only the WWE Universal title, we'll have the women's title with Charlotte, and we'll also have the tag team titles, the New Day defending their titles as well. So a lot of intriguing storylines there, how they'll work themselves out. It's not as set in stone as you would see, for example, SmackDown Live. A lot of curveballs have been thrown, especially in that women's division, Jeff.
I know, too. And, you know, it was refreshing that Raw opened up with the women, you know, Sasha Banks, Bayley, Dana Brooke, Charlotte, McFoley, of course, had to be there. Kind of weird how Sasha Banks should get the first shot at Charlotte, because she should be able, you know, to regain her title, get the first chance. But Bayley is coming off a victory over Charlotte, even though Dana Brooke, you know, kind of helped out. So then Dana Brooke actually slaps Charlotte, not taking any more of her crap. And then now you see, you know, a triple threat match. What a shocker, a triple threat match. And then surprisingly, Sasha Banks pins Bayley instead of Dana Brooke, which was kind of weird. You know,
about throwing curveballs. And you expect Dana Brooke, being the jobber that she is right now, and no offense to Dana Brooke, I like her, but that's what she is right now. She's basically a jobber.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you know, it may not hurt Bayley, but just kind of weird having Bayley lose a match. You know, it's only like maybe her, you know, third match on Raw, and for her to lose that, it's kind of weird. And it's kind of weird not having Bayley at Night of Champions. Yeah, I call myself at Clash of Champions. You know, and her not being on the card, it's kind of weird too. You know, so I mean, I guess Sasha Banks is back from the injury. I guess she's going to, you know, go one-on-one with Charlotte. But, you know, it's hard to believe that they're going to play hot potato with this WWE Women's Championship. You know, to me, honestly, I think Charlotte's got to retain. But you never know with the WWE, you know?
Well, we all know that plans can change in the instant. We always thought coming after SummerSlam that Sasha would actually retain the title and continue on a lengthy title reign. Now, whether that had to do with injuries that seemed to be dwelling on her, for the most part, which she needed that time off and actually had to drop the belt to Charlotte. But now if you do this flip-flop, and like you said, Jeff, it defeats the purpose of giving some type of, I wouldn't say credibility, but again, you want the women's title to mean something. If it goes from person to person, you need to establish it. It's still fairly new, so is the SmackDown women's title. I think you need a lengthy champion, and I've always been a fan of the heel champion, because you need that babyface to chase them. I think that's always the best formula to help build the aura and history around that title, make it mean something, so that when the individual who actually defeats the heel or the champ means more because they're fighting for a richer prize. So how that works out, I have no idea. I would say Charlotte would retain 100%, but the way WWE is throwing things around nowadays, which they're having their own issues with injuries now, which I like to hope won't plague them leading up to WrestleMania before you know it. They have a huge task of what's going to happen in the women's division. But at the same time, you've talked about depth on that front. With that, Nia Jax seems to be gaining a lot of momentum, which she did to Alicia Fox. And who knows where she fits in all this.
And I'm
so,
a little upset, too. I'm also upset, too, by the continuity with Dana Brooke. I mean, she slapped Charlotte, and all of a sudden she's, you know, apologizing, then taking her bags. You kind of would have thought that if something's going to happen there, that, you know, at Clash of Champions, that that's where Dana Brooke would have, you know, turned on Charlotte and turned face. The payoff happened like maybe 2 weeks later, and I don't see what benefited Dana Brooke, because at the end of the day, she's going back to Charlotte. So when she does turn again, it's not going to be organic or not going to be fresh, because we've already seen it, and people, you know, enjoyed it. But again, of course, WWE kind of have your head scratching there too. But something that doesn't have me scratching my head is the Gift of Jericho. And, you know, drink it in, man, because it just continues to get better and better. And how great is this, that most likely Clash of Champions, we're going to see Chris Jericho take on Sami Zayn. And you know, just the dynamic of Kevin Owens being one of the main reasons why they're even fighting here, and Jericho just seeming having the need to stick up for Kevin Owens. It's a great dynamic. And then just Sami Zayn, too, taking it another level, taking it up a notch with this promo, you know, calling Jericho a bitch and, you know, telling him that Kevin Owens is not the kind of guy he's gonna turn on you, too, you know. I think it was great. I think I'm looking forward to this match.
Me, too. And just for a lot of different factors than that, it's, I mean, we could talk about the whole Kevin Owens history, the bromance between Jericho and Kevin Owens, the history Kevin has had with Sami Zayn. I guess that interlocks this rivalry. But just from a personal standpoint, here you have Sami Zayn, a guy who's been around this business for a while, right? And Chris Jericho, the established veteran. And now a challenge from somebody who Jericho feels is beneath him, questioning everything that Jericho stood for. And so I think that itself has a nice dynamic where Jericho is like, well, I'm going to prove myself that I am everything that I have accomplished and said I have been. And I think it's just going to be great because they do have great chemistry behind each other. They have wrestled before on Raw and on SmackDown when they were in, you know, separate brands. So the fact that they have great chemistry in the ring, now we have a story behind it. We have something to make it more personal. It's just great. And like I've said time and time again, Jeff, we really, and I know it's a pun because it's on a t-shirt now, which is a rule he broke as a heel to sell his own merchandise, the Gift of Jericho. But it really is. It's a gift for the fact that Jericho's been doing it as long as he has, still at a very high level. And we all have to appreciate it because it might not be much longer we'll have it, not to bring this down. But again, we have to be appreciative because this is old school wrestling. The way they bring the story all together gives us a reason why we enjoy it so much.
You know, and of course you're trying to make me sad by thinking of life with no Jericho, but still though, enjoy for what it's worth. And Chris Jericho's,
it's the reality of the situation.
Chris Jericho's
man.
doing the best
do it
work.
Forever, okay?
And Sami Zayn really.
You want to live in fantasy, Jeff? Go live in fantasy, all right? It's gonna happen one day, and then I'll be emotional. I'm getting emotional right now talking about it. That Jericho one day won't be in the ring anymore.
And then Sami Zayn obviously needs the win here. So we'll see what happens there too. But it's really interesting though. We're talking about bromances. How about the Instagram that was shown by Kevin Owens and Ring of Honor champion Adam Cole as they're in the hotel room, and Adam Cole's laying in his bed with the Ring of Honor title, and Kevin Owens is laying on his side, not his side of it, on his bed with the Universal title, and I think it's funny. I wonder if Jericho's going to reply to that. I wonder if he's going to get jealous.
I can see Jericho being jealous of it. I can, you know.
But when did you ever think?
Who wouldn't be jealous of that?
But when did you ever think in social media that you...
That was probably Jericho's bed in the room they were staying in as they were traveling, and hey, why are you going to put another guy in my bed?
Jericho was like, someone was in my bed. But how great is it in social media nowadays that you can get pictures like that? Before, you know, a few years back, you wouldn't get stuff like that, and to me, it's awesome. I think it's great for the business.
Not only great for the business, but also it's a sense of evolution. It's reality, man. We're all aware of these other promotions out there. Now, WWE won't go out publicly on television, like, for example, on SmackDown. Maybe a little bit more on SmackDown than Raw. But you know, on the network or on, for example, Stone Cold's podcast or Jericho's podcast when he does it, whenever he's free, they mention these other places like TNA. They haven't mentioned Lucha Underground, but they talk about New Japan and things like that. So it's great because it finally makes us informed. Maybe as the casual fan, because I'm sure they're probably addressing more to the casual fan, that there is a world outside of the WWE. And I think the more we become aware of it and the more they promote it, it only helps the business. Because the Cruiserweight Classic, like you've mentioned and you've covered and you enjoy thoroughly, as I enjoy watching it with you too, and NXT, they're just an extension of that. These people come, they don't come from anywhere. They don't all come from the Performance Center. They come from all over the world in the independent scenes. So by opening up and broadening it, it just makes the business that much more better for all of us.
It does, man, and honestly, though, it's going to be very interesting as we head into Clash of Champions 2. So we know that Roman Reigns is going to probably most likely face Rusev for the United States title, too. That's how we left it at.
I'm saying thank God more for Roman's sake, because he needs to either win the title or be an individual rivalry and be out of the main event title picture for a little bit longer.
Yeah, and we actually got to see Roman Reigns get beat up, too, so he wasn't standing tall on Raw. So a lot of stuff going on, too. Again, AJ Styles becomes the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
Say it again, Jeff.
The new WWE World Heavyweight Champion, the champ that runs the camp, AJ
and
Styles.
The new face that runs the place.
And, of course, we got Kevin Owens. So life is good as the Universal Champion. Of course, Shinsuke Nakamura, of course, the NXT Champion. Of course, Nakamura most likely will have a rematch with Samoa Joe. That's interesting, too. But, you know, talk about, too, real quick, the CWC, the Classic Crowns, a new champion. It is TJ Perkins. He becomes the new Cruiserweight Champion. A lot of talk was about this. Ibushi and Sabre Jr. aren't in the future for the WWE. They are not signed. So a lot of people were thinking, well, would Ibushi become the Cruiserweight Champion? Because it was a trophy at first. But we found out that their Cruiserweight Championship would be actually handed down also to the winner. So you're wondering, wait a minute. If these guys aren't going to be wrestling for the company, we got to have two upsets, and it was Grand Metalik and TJ Perkins for the Cruiserweight Championship, and TJ Perkins is the first ever WWE, well, this version of a Cruiserweight Champion. So TJ Perkins, congratulations on that. It was a great match. And your thoughts, man, they gave away the Cruiserweight Championship too. So fast things happening for Raw and the Cruiserweight title.
It's a nice little twist. We knew the Cruiserweight division will be exclusively to the Raw brand. So it'd be great to see how it evolves from there. This tournament's been great all the way around. Granted, we have upsets with Ibushi losing and Grand Metalik losing. I think he was probably going to be
Sabre Jr. and Ibushi.
No, him losing the finals and Sabre Jr. obviously not going to be signed with WWE because they're signed elsewhere and want to go on their own adventures, which is fine. So they're definitely a wrench in everything. But again, you just like to hope, whether it was Ibushi or now Perkins, who's the champion, you just hope that the WWE carries on the momentum of this tournament, which gives us a unique look on something different, which is what you want to do. That's why TNA, for I wouldn't say so many years, but were very unique too, because they gave you something different with their X Division series.
And the heart and soul of WCW was the Cruiserweight division.
Exactly. So you want to use this as your backbone to help promote young stars. And again, it's all about evolving the business. I just have my biggest fear is two things, Jeff, that it'll die away a little bit from the momentum because they won't know what to do with it. And secondly, these stars that do come in will be given ceilings to the fact that they're just labeled cruiserweights. And that's the last thing
I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about either of those things. But you know what it is? I'm worried that they get thrown to the wolves and they get thrown to Braun Strowman so you can just eat them alive. And that to me is what you mentioned, those two points. That's what would kill this division right away. And I think they would be dumb. And I think it would be Vince McMahon who would be like, well, we need Braun Strowman to beat up some little guys. And if that happens, I think it's the worst thing that could happen.
Vince McMahon has a lot to deal with on his own. He's got a quad. He probably injured his quad. And
squatting, I guess, right?
Squatting. He's got to deal with surgery. So I'm sure he's not really worrying about the Cruiserweight division right now, worrying about getting healthy, get better. Vinnie Mac, we'll have you have a seat waiting for you here at the High Spot Podcast when you're getting better. But yeah, those fears are kind of similar to my first point where it's like, I hope they use it correctly. But again, that's just a perfect example of how they'll use it incorrectly and just squash the division and make it lose all its luster. So I don't know what's going to happen. It's great that that the Cruiserweight division is coming back. I couldn't be more excited for it. But like I said, we hope that they do it right by doing it the right way.
Do you think it was a letdown that they couldn't get Ibushi or Sabre Jr. to sign? Or do you think that was a bad blow for them to get early in the Cruiserweight? Or do you think TJ Perkins can carry it?
I think Ibushi had more name recognition, but yeah, I think Perkins carry it well. And at the end of the day, it could be a blessing in disguise. What I mean by that is that, okay, you have these known figures in there, so these individuals who have beaten these well-known names can only get more notoriety. And who knows what the future holds for example, somebody like Ibushi. But at the same time, at the end of the day, all you look at it was the Cruiserweight Classic a success, and it was.
Total success, man. You have about four matches in that tournament that are match of the year quality so far. So, I mean, that's also great, too. And again, Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr. both lose in the finals. And we have a new champion in TJ Perkins, which is great. And real quick, man, just wrapping up here, too, is before we wrap up, man, just great to be a wrestling fan right now. And also getting ready for our interview with Lee England Jr., man. And let me tell you something. I still got goosebumps thinking of the way he played that violin in NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. Just a great performance. And we were able to get a chance to talk to him. And he came here on the High Spot podcast, gave us a great interview. And, just great for him to be here.
Yeah, it was great to talk to him. It was great to kind of rehash all those memories we had, and more importantly, the feeling he had when he was out there in the crowd, living that moment that we lived with him as well, and just getting to know a lot about Lee. And more importantly, here's a guy that has worked hard, has hustled like Jeff and I hustle, and more importantly, he's doing something that Jeff and I do too. We're living our dream. We're doing the High Spot podcast just as he's doing his living his dream with music and everything he's doing in his career. So it was great to sit and talk with him and find out a lot of things about him. And more importantly, rehashing how he felt the moment he was at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. And this is what he had to say.
All right, Brian, so we're sitting there at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, and all of a sudden, the spotlight goes right in the middle of the ramp, and I'm like, we're all going, like, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden, you hear the chords of that violin playing, and the goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about that night again and how awesome it was, and I knew we had to get him on. And who I'm referring to is, of course, Lee England Jr., and you can follow him on Twitter at Lee England Jr., and also any information you want him, LeeEnglandJr.com. And so glad to have him on because, Lee, listen, that night was great. After the whole introduction of Nakamura, Shinsuke Nakamura, we all were like, oh, we need a break. And then we realized that there was a fight that still was going to go on. And just amazing and amazing. And I'm glad that you are on here. How's everything, man?
Everything is wonderful, man. Wonderful.
Did you relive those moments when Jeff was just talking about it to build you up a little bit more? Were you reliving those moments where you just stay in the middle of the ring, that spotlight was on you? And from our vantage point, because we're like two rows away from it, not bragging here because I did get the tickets, Jeff. But yeah, it was everyone was just bitter quiet. And so I'm sure that could be really intimidating to somebody not knowing what the reaction is going to be. How did it feel for you being in that position in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely relive it. Every time I go online to view it, you know, I remember that very moment where I walked out and, you know, you've got 16,000 plus people on their feet, but like captive, just quiet. And, it wasn't necessarily intimidating. It was just more so like, you know, just like, wow, it's like just take it all in. It was like one of those moments. It's just, you know, I really settled in and I noticed that everybody else was kind of like, you know, anticipating what was going to happen. And, you know, I had planned it and we had, you know, we had rehearsed it, but, you know, I really didn't know what to expect until it got started.
Well, let me tell you something from a crowd perspective where we were. Everyone was like, whoa, what's going on? Okay, so this is the mentality for me being in the crowd, right? I was like, okay, whoa, you know, and the spotlight was, like I said, on the ramp. And then we were like, what is this? And when you went back to reach, we were like, oh man, it's like a sword or something like that. And then we're, you know, and they're like, wait,
yeah, the light glistened on that. I think, man, this guy's pulling out a samurai sword, you know, or something.
And then all of a sudden, we heard the chords of the violin, and I'm telling him, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, this is going to be a big time intro for Nakamura.
Oh,
you know, talk about rehearsal and everything like that. How did you get approached by the WWE to do this?
It was because of my affiliation with Brand Jordan. So being one of four non-athletes that is signed to Brand Jordan, they're always, you know, creating opportunities for me. And because of the relationship that they have with the guy over at the WWE, the one that's the head of music, they heard the intro at the Jordan Brand. They're like, you know, man, you should let our guy do the intro or whatever. And upon the conversation, they just gave me a call and figured out how we can make it work. And so when I came into town, we actually re-recorded the lines so that it would be something that, you know, I was more likely to play. You know, like they're like, here, well, give us your interpretation, you know, when we were in the studio. And, you know, that's what came of it.
So when you heard the song, and I tell you, sometimes in WWE, the song makes the wrestler, sometimes it fits their personality. When you first heard that, the chords for Nakamura, like, were you into it? Or were you like, wow, this is definitely something I can get myself into?
Oh yeah, definitely, because it was very upbeat and very, you know, very strong intro. I was very excited about it, but I still, even going all the way into rehearsal, had no idea that it was such a fan favorite and that, you know, everybody knew the melody like that and that they would chant and all that. So I had no idea because, you know, it was like my coming back to WWE was more so a reintroduction from when I was a child. So I just had no clue that it was that big of a deal. And then for it to go as well as it did, it was, you know, very much, very exciting.
Well, you know, talk about, you know, being reintroduced to the product, WWE. I mean, I guess mine's a little bit of a two-parter. First of all, when you heard it, I always mentioned to Jeff, when I first heard the first chords and the melody, obviously, of the music for Shinsuke Nakamura, it felt more like, with anything, music tells a story. And you said you listened to, you know, your own, you heard it and you wanted to put your own spin on it, kind of like put your thumbprint on it. Is that the way you kind of felt as you're introducing it, kind of putting your voice to the song, which has already been established for a little bit now? So do you feel that way when you're playing the song during the NXT TakeOver event?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I, you know, Triple H, he was, man, they were so gracious. You know, they handled me very, very well. And, you know, when we were rehearsing, they were also saying, like, you know, we're going to give you, you know, the intro. You have as much time as you need, you know, to play. Like, this is your moment. So have your moment. They're like, you know, you're a performer, so, you know, do what you do. And so the opening before the track actually started was actually, you know, my own improvised interpretation of, you know, what I felt should come before the track even came on.
And then, you know, you're mentioning Triple H. How was it like, you know, back to the moments before and then after? Like, what were you, like, in awe of besides, you know, the atmosphere and everything like that? But
because we saw you on the network.
We saw you kind of a little bit awestruck.
And just, I guess, the emotion hit you from the intro. What was it like going backstage and talking to Triple H after that that historic, I think, my opinion, Jeff, you could probably say not, historic event right there?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was one of a kind. It was unbelievable because, you know, we had planned, like I said, and they told me, you know, they were really excited about it. But, you know, I had no way of knowing what they knew. And when it went over and they loved it and, you know, we had such a great response from it, you know, it was incredible to soak up all of that positive energy, you know, all those good vibes.
Now, again, like I was talking about before, you know, reading up on you and looking at the, you know, the amazing attributes and contributions you've gotten and done.
It's impressively, very impressive.
Huge impressive resume. And Jeff and I only hope to achieve that too. But the thing I like so much about you, Lee, is that when I've got a chance to read up on you and speaking to you now is that you're somebody obviously had a dream. Had a goal, and you went out there and you went to go pursue. I mean, at the tender age of 6 years old, basically listening to a demonstration and listening to the violin and saying, that's what I want to do. You know, most people at age six, you know, they jump, I want that, I want that. No, I don't like this anymore.
They're playing their sandbox or, you know.
Exactly.
You know,
So what about the violin? Was it the sound? Was it looking at it during the demonstration? What about it particularly just spoke to you? Or is it just kind of, you know, as people like to say, destiny, that once you saw it, that's what you wanted to do?
I mean, I think it was a little bit of all of that. You know, when I first heard it, the teachers that were playing it, you know, they were demonstrating a lot of different instruments. And so, you know, I don't know, for some reason I was just drawn to the violin more so than anything else. And, you know, as the story goes, when I got it, you know, after my parents had brought it home, you know, I definitely was like, I want to quit. You know, after just toying with it, you know, for minutes, a second at least.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like I heard it, right? Like that kind of feeling,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was like, man, it's broke. I thought it was broke. So I was like, I quit immediately. And so I went to my father and told him, yeah, I want to quit. And, you know, his first response was, sure, you can quit. You just have to practice 15 minutes a day. And all I heard was, you can quit. So
a little reverse psychology there, right?
That happened to me when I tried playing the saxophone for the first time. I was like, you know, well, nothing's happening. But so you fell for it, and you practiced 15 minutes, and you've become just an amazing sound that comes out of the violin when you play it. And honestly, like, the success here, and you have done so many of the things here. Listen, talk about the fact that playing for Michael Jordan and a bunch of NBA players and how you got your start there by getting signed with the brand.
You know, initially I did Making His Band. I went on the show Making His Band, and I made it on the show when they weren't looking for violinists. They were only looking for drums, keyboards, electric bass, electric guitar, and background singers. And I kind of slipped through the cracks, and I was successful on that show. And as soon as I got off of that, I ended up going on tour with an artist who saw me performing. I opened up for them at a venue in Chicago, and I had did so well during that performance that they were like, "Oh man, you gotta come on tour with us." So not only did I go on tour with them, I ended up recording music with them, and then I went from there to, we're traveling all over the United States, and we ended up getting in front of Michael Jordan, and you know they were giving me like 5 minutes on stage by myself, and in that 5 minutes, I was able to, you know, basically subdue this crowd of A-list celebrities who really weren't paying attention to us. It was like cocktail hour, so they really were spending their time drinking and socializing. And, you know, from the first notes I started to play, I started to get a little attention here, a little attention there. And by the time I finished, I had everyone's attention in the room, including Michael Jordan. And when I got off stage, he basically was like, you know, I'm going to take care of you. I didn't know what it meant, but I know what it means now.
Yeah, I can imagine Michael Jordan come up to you and say, "I'm going to take care of you." I mean, whether it's that what you just said, what you're living right now in your dream, or a pair of Jordans, I don't care what it is. As long as Michael Jordan said to me, "You're taking care of me," that's all that matters. Michael Jordan said that to me. I'm like, "Could you have that in writing, please, or could you just sign that?"
And he did. Make sure you got it in writing.
But
and I did. Yeah.
But before that, though, what I loved reading about you too, which I thought was more like a, I don't say maybe epiphany, but an integral part in your life too. I mean, you graduated school, you went to school, you went through all the systems, and then you basically wanted to become a music teacher. And you went to John M. Smith Elementary School in Chicago, the public school system. And something that was really integral that I found very inspiring for me is that you're sitting there with a bunch of kids, and you're going to teach them about following their dreams. When you yourself were like, "Well, you know what? I'm going to tell these kids to follow their dreams, but what about mine?" Not anything against the public school system, but this isn't exactly what you want to do. You want to do more than just teach music, right? Talk to me about that moment, how that felt for you, and what particular moment did you start saying to yourself, "You know what? I got to get up out of here, and I got to run with this, because this is something really special to me."
Well, I always believed, even when I was in college, that I just needed to get in front of people. And so the fact that I even got the teaching job was crazy in itself, because I had forgot that upon graduating from college, I put my resume in for the Chicago Public School District. But I spent the entire summer playing anywhere that they would let me. And so in the midst of that, I ended up on stage with Stevie Wonder, like during that summer.
Yeah.
And I just had, I just knew. I started realizing, like, you know, there's something to this. And so I was teaching. I ended up getting a teaching job. And, you know, in the midst of getting the teaching job, when I was actually at the interview, and I told the principal, you know, what I was doing and what I'd been doing, I asked him how he got my information. I forgot about the resume that I put in, and I told him about the whole Stevie Wonder thing. And he's like, "Well, what's going to happen in 2 months if Stevie Wonder calls you?" And he's like, "Well, you know what? Don't answer that." He says, "Because if the mayor or whoever it is calls me and wants me to move to a different position down in Springfield to be the head of schools or something like that, I'm leaving." And so right then we kind of had an understanding, and I didn't even make it through the entire school year because of the Making His Band audition. Every day I went to work at like 6 or 7 in the morning, I was calling the radio station in hopes that I could get onto the stage for one of their bigger concerts, because I just, you know, I felt like it was something that I wanted to do. And I just kept pursuing it every morning, every morning, every morning. And I finally got in touch with the right person. And I didn't get that gig, but I got another gig that put me in line to be able to audition for Making His Band. And so when I actually, you know, made the audition, I had to leave school early. And I had to stop teaching early. And it was at that point that I realized, you know, I don't think I can come back to teaching, because there's something else for me. But I'll definitely go back to teaching with all of my my nonprofit endeavors that are going on right now.
And you mentioned, you know, Stevie Wonder, and of course, with Sean Combs too. At your age, growing up, what artist inspired you and showed you, "Hey, this is my dream. This is what I want to do. This is who I want to follow."
I was inspired by a guy named Gerald Damien, who was a black violinist, and I had that was the only jazz CD or CD of music that wasn't classical, you know, in nature. And I was very inspired by that. You know, I would sit and just play to that for hours. But I, you know, I don't even think that I really had a firm grasp on the fact that I was going to, you know, become a violinist down the line. It kind of just, it was bigger than a dream. It was something I couldn't have even dreamed.
And now you're in L.A., and of course, you're either going to make it in New York or L.A. How's everything going in L.A.? You obviously, a lot of things you've done, Jimmy Kimmel Live, the Monique Show. How's it going? Is L.A. the place that you've always wanted to be?
L.A. has been amazing to me. I've met a lot of people. I have a very diverse network of people who help me and create opportunities for me. And one opportunity that came out of it, which has kind of been like the epitome of coming to L.A. with a dollar and a dream, was I was in front of George Lucas and Elton John, and Lady Gaga opened the entire night of this performance, and Samuel Jackson was one of the presenters, and Quincy Jones was in the audience. And I went on in the middle, myself along with three other performers that I hired, a pianist, a bass player, and a cellist. And we did a...
Sounds like the start of a joke, a cellist, a pianist, and a... But go ahead.
Right, that's how it sounds, right? So I had, you know, we had this small little quartet, and I went on in the middle of the show and pretty much stole the show. And when I finished performing, Quincy Jones was backstage with, you know, words for me. He asked me two questions. He said, "What is your name?" And I was like, "Lee England Jr." And he's like, "And who did the arrangement of the song?" And I was like, "I did." He's like, "That's all I needed to know," and he walked away.
Wow.
And, you know, I was like, that was Quincy Jones. So I'm sitting backstage trying to figure out what I can say to him, not knowing that when he came back from presenting the award, he brought George Lucas and Elton John, and Lady Gaga had came downstairs to watch that part of the show. And they spent like 5 or 10 minutes just, you know, asking me questions and showing me love. And when they all finished, Quincy put me to the side, and we sat down and we talked for an hour. And, you know, that was kind of like history in the making. So he put on a showcase for me in which it was a Quincy Jones Presents type of event. And after that, he gave me a call like, you know, I want to work with you on a more permanent basis. And, I mean, what else do you come to L.A. for than to experience things like that?
No, definitely, Lee, because a lot of people, they go pursue things they feel that they're passionate about or things that feel will put them in a financial stable situation, which, again, nothing's really stable in this world that we live in. What you just mentioned right here and there, I mean, I have to ask you now straight up, do you ever get starstruck anymore? Because all these people you're mentioning now, it seems like maybe, are you numb to the fact too, or is it still more like you're every single day you're waking up, it's just a new experience and you're living the dream?
No, you know what? It's interesting because most of the time when I get starstruck, it's
Shinsuke,
you know,
Nakamura or Triple H.
So someone I didn't expect to be starstruck over. And most of the time it's like, you know, you meet people and you know, I have the rare privilege of what I believe is, you know, when you meet celebrities and things like that, you know, you meet them, but they don't meet you. But if they actually hear me perform, it is more of a situation where it's a mutually, like, I'm meeting you and you're meeting me. You know what I do. And it's
that's a good point.
And so I get a lot of love because of that. And so I'm more appreciative of the way that certain celebrities have handled me. You know, like when I met Beyonce, that was crazy because she had nothing but good words. And I had actually played a rendition of a song that I had created that was her song. And I played it for her and Jay-Z. And the response that they gave me was like, yo, I couldn't have planned that kind of thing.
Lee, between you, me, and Jeff right now, is Beyonce as easy in the eyes as people claim her out to be?
Yeah, definitely. But she got a sweet personality, though. So
yeah,
you know, yeah. That kind of makes it even better.
So what everyone wants to know is what advice, okay, for example, we are in the podcast world. Everyone has their own podcast. We try to be different. We do a little mix of wrestling, and we talk to some headliners, do a little bit of this and that, right? What message from your experiences can you tell us and our listeners of how to follow their dream and how to stick with it?
Man, that's a great question. I think the piece of advice that I would have as far as when you're in pursuit of your dreams is to not let anyone tell you anything contrary to what you believe. You know, you can learn the system, but just like I understood when I started to research a lot of the things that Quincy Jones had did, and that was used to ask him what was his formula, and he would say there is no formula. We were just doing what we felt. And so in a world of structure where people are always copying off the next person, it's the innovators are the ones who end up, you know, having their name live on throughout history. So it's not necessarily a situation where somebody can tell you, you know, that you should do this or you shouldn't do that, when really, you know, you have to make it up in your mind that you're going to accomplish something and be unwavering. Like, just don't stop for anyone, not even yourself sometimes. You got to get over yourself, too.
Well, speaking of that, too, I mean, I always hear the expression, Lee, that, you know, I'm sure you've heard as well. We are when we're kids, and our parents tell that, too. And people we look up to and aspire to be as well, not we try to copy what they do, but again, try to do it in our own way. Always give that expression to me, at least, that I hear is, you know, do something you love, never work a day in your life. Can you, granted, right now at this moment, say that as 100% accurate, or is it always work?
That's 1,000,000% accurate.
Yeah.
The thing that but you know what, I also believe that you have to satisfy your reality. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, starving artist this, starving artist that. That's true only if you aren't, you know, if you're not pursuing your dreams in a manner in which you are taking care of your business first. Like, you have to do whatever it takes to, you know, have your basic needs met, you know, food and shelter and water and clothing and all that kind of stuff. If you're not doing that, I don't feel like you have even the space to dream. And so for me, when I first moved to L.A., I had just learned how to street perform. And so I took to the streets, and I literally was, what I understand now, was getting paid to practice. So in the midst of, you know, dreaming big, I was satisfying my reality, actually doing what I loved. So it was like killing two birds with one stone.
Lee, was the Barclays the biggest venue you performed at yet, or no?
No, because I had performed at the Madison Square Garden
okay.
a couple of times. Actually, you know, I was doing an NBA tour. And so
okay.
I've been at, you know, all of the NBA, well, pretty much all of the NBA arenas. I mean, I've traveled overseas and done things. But Barclays, that was my third time being there, but not in front of a sold-out crowd.
A diehard wrestling audience, man. That well, you had their blood pumping, man. That, again, just killer intro.
And that's actually something I want to dive right into with you, Lee, as well. It's like you said, you've worked Madison Square Garden. You've done a lot of stuff in Los Angeles. You've done stuff for the NBA. I've even listened to a lot of your stuff on YouTube. You guys can catch them on YouTube as well. Stuff for like the NFL. Amazing stuff. Especially the one that tribute to Michael Jackson, the one you did, was, I thought, really good too. I actually got emotional watching that as well when you're in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you know, by a star. It was great. But how much would you say wrestling fans are in terms of how much they... It's more like a cult following, wouldn't you say? Because when you said that, you weren't expecting them to be humming the melody, but everyone knew it. What kind of expression, because you've been reintroduced to this, what type of feeling do you get now at the point when you started watching wrestling when you were a kid? Is there a different feeling? Is it kind of like walking right back in, like riding a bike? You never lost that feeling, just it's been such a long time. What was that feeling for you like, wow, this is kind of how I remembered it, or just something completely different?
You know, when I remembered, it was more fantastic, you know, and it's now more mature, just understanding the theatrics and the storyline and the agility that even goes into pulling some of those things off. And, you know, like, I mean, the intros, all that stuff, it was very, you know, it was very eye-opening to remember, you know, how easy it is to get drawn into something like that. But I do have to speak on the WWE fans, all right? They are by far coolest people I've ever experienced, because even after I had done the performance, when I went out to the car and they saw the violin, they recognized who I was, they started chanting, they started singing.
Yeah.
And then I ended up at a bar the very next day, and there were a bunch of WWE podcasts going on, and I ended up telling somebody who I was, and they told everyone else. And we ended up doing interviews, and they started chanting and singing and taking pictures. And, you know, they treated me as if I had got done wrestling and had just won the belt or something.
Hey, they're loyal, man. You entertain them, and they'll be with you through and through, man.
Oh, yeah, man, definitely. I've been getting nothing but positive feedback from them on all social media platforms.
What other projects do you have coming up? You know, we've done. Listen, there's one more song that I want you to do. You need to do if you ever get. This probably won't be the last time you're
just requesting
again.
Now.
I'm requesting.
Making
and
requests.
It's so obvious. This is the one you got to do next. If you do NXT, you got to do that glorious song by Bobby Roode. I'm sure that you've been asked to do that.
Yeah, that song is crazy. Oh, goodness. Yeah, that intro, I was just like, wow, that was special.
But you know the violin would sound, that it would sound great with that intro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great. Now he's giving me ideas. Now, if you ever do that, just make sure you just mention the High Spot Podcast and Jeff Martin, the Jersey Wrecking Crew, that they just at least gave you that idea.
Yeah. So what other things, what other stuff do you have upcoming lined up for you?
Well, I have two things. I have an album that I'm working on alongside Quincy. And then I have my nonprofit called Love Notes that I've been working diligently on as well. And that's, I feel like they're going hand in hand, because the more notoriety I get as an artist, the easier it is for me to push the message to the kids, you know, to dream and dream big.
Lee, another thing I just want to ask you real quick before we let you go, I know, and I thank you so much for your time. We really enjoy it. I mean, we can talk to you for hours and hours. But the thing that I wanted to also talk to you about was that, you know, I have so much respect for musicians and just artists in general, because I feel a musician is an artist, because you're creating something out of nothing. Can you just take me a little bit, if you can, through the process it takes to develop these kind of things? Jeff was talking about the projects that you're coming up with. What does it take? Do you need to, like, for example, be in a room quiet for 48 hours, or it just comes to you and you have to write it on a pad? What's the process that goes? Because there's a lot of creative process that goes there, a lot of creative freedom, too, when you're creating your own sound. Well, can you walk us through that process you go through when you're trying to develop something new?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as a musician and as an artist, as somebody who creates, you know, full-time, you know, you have to get over, first of all, being intimidated by the fact that one song, you know, just like you all, just one podcast or one video or somebody else or one speech could really change your life. And so when I'm sitting down and I'm working, you know, most of the time it's either, it's all over the place, because, you know, you never know when inspiration is going to hit you. And so for me, one thing I do is I keep my phone, I always put voice memos. Anytime I have even the smallest little melody, I put it in my phone. And when I'm flying, I listen to all of the voice memos that I've acquired, you know, over the time that I, you know, since the last time I flew. And I'll take those, I have sometimes take those ideas back to the studio and begin to develop those. Sometimes, you know, you'll be sitting in the studio and all of a sudden you'll have an idea. But I've been creating music for a long time, and so I have a lot of ideas that I've accrued over the years. And it's funny how sometimes you'll have a track, you know, you'll have music that you've worked on, and so I also write lyrics and things like that, and all of a sudden the lyrics seem to just fall out of the sky, and here you are with a complete work, and, you know, all you had to do is, like, interpret what you were hearing into a way, into, like, just manifesting it, basically.
Yeah, because we also had WWE artist Rob Schamberger on, and he also talked about what inspires him, because he does the painting, the various artwork for the WWE superstars, and he says he's either home barefoot with his cats, surrounded by his cats, and he gets inspired to write. So everyone has their own different thing. So, you know, and that's how he gets inspired, and you've talked about how you get inspired and what do you do. What do you do for fun? Like, what is your way to meditate? What are your hobbies? What do you like to do?
When you're not creating
music.
When I'm not creating, I've learned that, you know, as a violinist, you know, and a lot of people who have understand discipline, they, you know, you get to a space where when you're practicing for perfection. And a lot of times you take that perfection outside of the practice room and you try to live that. And so once I realized that I was doing that, I would start doing things that I have no knowledge of. So I've learned to do a lot of different things. And as far as hobbies, I like doing anything that's new.
You speaking of NBA, do you like, you know, the NBA a lot? Sports guy?
Oh, yeah. I love sports. Love it.
So you've done stuff with the NBA, and so where can we find your work? So we already plugged the website, LeeEnglandJr.com. Where else can we find your work?
My social media handle is the same on every platform, and that's at Lee England Jr. So that's L-E-E, England like the country, J-R. I mean, you can find me everywhere.
Lee, man, I've had a great time talking to you, and you know, I'll be honest with you, it's inspiring just listening to you and listening to the enthusiasm and passion you have, because, you know, very few of us ever get a chance to live our dreams. I know Jeff and I, this is a dream of ours of talking, not only doing a podcast, but, you know, really trying to be innovative in our own way and doing things we enjoy. You know, there are countless hours too where it's a grind, but again, we never complain. With all the stuff you've done, like I said, we've mentioned only a small portion, and there's so much more that you've done in your resume. My thing to you is, what keeps you grounded? What allows you to be you? I mean, because it's very easy. Most people always talk about how when people have success early on in their age or whatever point in their life, when they've struggled and worked really hard like you have, what keeps you centered to the point that you don't get lost in all the, you know, the stardom
hoopla,
and people
yeah.
around you and the hoopla? What keeps you grounded?
Well, my spirituality, for one. I mean, I really truly believe that, playing violin or being talented and stuff like that is a gift. And so I wouldn't want to squander my gift with arrogance and ego. So I believe that, you know, I could have been anything. I could have been anywhere in the world. There's a whole host of factors that, can be against me, just the cultural implications of being an African-American in the United States alone is enough to keep me grounded. So I don't take it for granted. That's the first thing. I definitely don't take it for granted. And then, you know, the friends that I have, they definitely not going to let me get big-headed, because they have nothing but jokes all day long to keep my feet on the ground.
So, Lee, listen, man, basically it all started on a whim, just trying to reach out to you, and because that's how much we enjoyed your performance at the Barclays at Takeover Brooklyn, man. After that, the whole entrance was done. I told Brian here, I was like, listen, I gotta sit down, man. And then there was a whole match that still had to go on,
yeah,
too. And
we were worn out by the entrance.
The whole crowd was like,
you know, which we blame you, Lee, yeah. that you wore us out right before the match happened. And it was a great match, by the way, but we couldn't enjoy it anymore because, like, man, Lee just exhausted the hell out of us.
And when you say you're grounded, you obviously are, because for you to be able to, you know, with a simple reply email and to be so gracious with your time today really shows what kind of, you know, guy you are and everything. And again, we appreciate the performance, appreciate your artwork, your artwork and everything. And just keep up the good work, man. And you definitely have two fans here.
And more than that, we appreciate you, Lee, for everything you've done. Like I said, you've been an inspiration to Jeff and I, and obviously the people listening to the High Spot podcast, the fact that you're living your dream. You're doing what you set out to do, and now you're living it, which means that it can happen to anybody as long as you keep working at it.
True.
All right, Lee. So thank you so much, man. And definitely, man, we hope to keep in touch. And anything else you got in the future, you know, please let us know.
Definitely, man. I appreciate you all for having me, man.
And a special thanks goes out to Lee England Jr., having him on here. Jeff, like I said, with all our guests, I could have talked to him for hours. It's just great for him to give us his time and just relive those memories we had, because it was a special weekend. I mean, you had cards stacked from NXT TakeOver to SummerSlam to Raw. And a lot of surprises and a lot of downfalls, but again, it was an exciting journey, and we shared it with Lee.
Definitely a great story, and just an amazing artist, plays the violin really, really amazingly, and you could tell by the success, it really makes you want to go out there and get it. And you know, he never gave up. He knew what he wanted to do for the longest time, and obviously a inspirational story too. And again, so we want, like doing here, folks, here we want you to chase your dreams, and he obviously did it and look to where he is now. And of course, he's going to be on to bigger and better things. You know, he's got to do Glorious. I told him he's got to do Glorious, and until he does that, I don't think I'll be satisfied. But Lee England Jr., you can follow him on Twitter at Lee England Jr., also on his website, LeeEnglandJr.com, also on Instagram, Lee England Jr., everything Lee England Jr. So thank you so much for doing the interview, and just a great, 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 great show today, man. Great show.
Yeah, awesome time, and we can't wait to have him again down the road somewhere, and hopefully sooner than later. And speaking of dreams, Jeff, and living the dreams, you guys have been living the dream because you've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as Brain Stew Radio Network. For Jeff Martin, I am Brian Berger. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and after listening to this episode, your life is just too sweet.